Okay, first of all, I want to thank the organizers for giving me a possibility to give this talk. But in principle, this talk is not about this particular supernova remnant. I use it just kind of for example, and I try to like give a brief review of about non-relativistic perpendicular high Mach number shocks. So what's the current state of art, and what else we need to do, and what's going on in this field. Okay, first few slides just about introduction. So here we're talking about supernova paradigm, also that all the particles below near energy produced by supernova remnants, and we assume that they are produced via diffusive shock acceleration. So, and for the diffusive shock acceleration, we have like two main problems: is the particle injection problem and problem of generation of scattering turbulences. And of course, here we want to have like self-consistent system, so that all these particles are injected by some internal shock mechanism, and this turbulence is also produced by some particles or cosmic rays escaped from the shock region. So here I'm concentrated on electron injection. Is it more tough problem because they have lower mass, and this gap between this Maxwellian bulk, a power law, is larger for the electrons. And here I also want to look at the possibility to generate this scattering turbulences upstream generated by electrons, because if we look at the quasi-perpendicular case, first of all, you will find electrons propagating upstream, not the ion, because electrons, because of lower mass, they easily can achieve relativistic energy and then escape a shock in subluminal case. So just to recall the parameter range, so here we have non-relativistic shocks with high sonic and alphanic Mach number, and here I'm mostly concentrated on perpendicular or quasi-perpendicular shocks. And of course, if we're talking about electron injection, we need to look at, we need to use particle and cell simulations because first of all, we're looking at electron acceleration mechanism. And if we want to look at some balance stability generated by electrons, of course, we again need to use the particle and cell simulations. So let's go to the generation of scattering turbulences. So as I mentioned before, if the shock angle satisfies this condition, we have subluminal case, and electrons, relativistic electrons, first of all, can escape the shock region. And this problem, first time was discussed in Amano-Hoshino 2007. So they investigated regime, a high Mach number regime, where some Bunneman waves generated in the leading shock of the foot, of the shock foot. So we have some cold enough upstream electrons. They are hit by shock surfing acceleration, and later on, some electrons with high enough perpendicular velocity can undergo this mirror reflection and then can be reflected upstream. And they even derived some conditions at which these reflected upstream electrons can produce some alphanic waves, and later on can be scattered. But pretty recently, like a few weeks ago, it was demonstrated that for the oblique shocks, these propagating upstream electrons can generate much easier, can generate some Bell instability or Bell-like instability, non-resonant instability. And if you simulate long enough, up to like 50 ion gyro times, which is well above the like current 2D simulation in this field, you can find that these propagating upstream electrons produce a lot of turbulences, and it ends up in some power law in this field. So we end this process strongly parameter dependent, so it's we'll still need to look and we still need to understand how exactly it works, why it works only for like high Mach alphanic and sonic Mach number cases, where you have like really a lot of these propagating upstream electrons. They produce Bell instability and so on and so forth. So the main idea behind this work, as I understand, is that, okay, first of all, it's possible, but we still need to look how exactly it works, because 2D and 3D physics is much more complicated than 1D physics. Luckily, I have some simulations done in 2D for the same angle. It was interesting. We have this bunch of propagating upstream electrons. As we discussed with Anatoly, this like density of this beam is like order of magnitude lower, so it means that it's much more tougher to run long enough 2D simulations and wait until this beam produces some balance stability. In addition to that, this beam of electron produces additional electrostatic waves upstream, so you have something else going on upstream in addition to 1D physics. I don't know, probably also have it somewhere far upstream. And of course, this reflection process in 2D, it's much more complicated because we have originally here we had only Bunneman instability, which hits electrons via shock surfing acceleration, but here we have Bunneman instability, we have magnetic reconnection going on exactly at the region where we have reflection of electrons. So we really need to look at these cases and try to understand what's going on in this field. Okay, we can go to the electron injection mechanism. So this is a brief overview of microstructure of the perpendicular shock physics in 2D case with in-plane configuration, but it's pretty similar to those what we see in 3D. So we have upstream undisturbed plasma, we have the foot region with Bunneman instability, electrostatic waves, electrons can be accelerated by shock surfing acceleration, we have Weibull instability in shock ramp, we have magnetic reconnection going on here. And in principle, a bunch of simulations have been performed in this field, and the real problem is that all these acceleration mechanisms, they are strongly parameter dependent. So they depend on the mass ratio, depend on the shock velocity, Mach number, dimensionality of the system. And the real problem is that if you go to the 3D, it's already like 25 million CPU hours. Fully realistic, just for fun, I did these calculations, 20 billions, and this is optimistic. Optimistic prediction for such simulations. So we still need to stack a 2D simulation, but hopefully, luckily, we already know how to approximate the realistic 3D physics with 2D simulations, more or less. And in addition to that, all the scaling problems, well, this shock structure strongly time dependent. So as you see, if you look at the Bunneman waves, they appear, disappears here, the same with Weibull filaments and magnetic reconnection going on. So it's pretty tough problems, but we still need to continue with that. But just if we summarize all the acceleration processes go through which electrons can be accelerated, we have shock surfing acceleration, which works in all three, like in all three cases, 1D, 2D, 3D. In 2D, it's also parameter dependent. It depends on the configuration of magnetic field you choose in your simulation. You have stochastic scattering in Weibull instability region because you have a lot of turbulences. In 3D case, in 3D oblique case, you have a drift, additional drift, and you have magnetic reconnection, which works pretty well in 2D. We still don't know how it works in 3D because for the 3D simulations, pretty low mass ratio was used, and for this mass ratio, magnetic reconnection not really well observed. But here I want to stop at the stochastic shock drift acceleration, which is combination of the stochastic scattering and drift. So, and this is, appears to be like the most efficient process we have in quasi-perpendicular shocks at this moment. And during which the electrons is pre-accelerated in this Bunneman zone via shock surfing acceleration, and later on it undergoes some stochastic scattering, and it ends up in some power law here. And probably if we simulate long enough, it can continue a little bit, but definitely we will need something more, some other process to continue this line up to injection energy, which is about like 50, 80. for the realistic system. But if we start from this spectra and continue it up to like through few orders of magnitude, we can finally estimate some injection. And what I try to do in for the next few slides, I try to like estimate what injection efficiency we can have if we calculate and estimate from our simulations and compare with observational data. So we can go to the Dijkhoff Center and we can look at X-ray luminosity at about 2 kV and look at and take some parameters like shock velocity, size, and so on and so forth. So, and it's like I made some simple calculations, let's say, with some assumptions. So first of all, 2 kV X-ray photons emitted by 10 TeV electrons. We can calculate how much electrons do we need to support this observed X-ray luminosity. And finally, if we assume like power law for the electrons with index minus 2, we end up with the injection efficiency we needed to support this X-ray luminosity about 10 to the minus 8 to 10 to the minus 9. So, and let's do some calculations based on our simulation. So first of all, if we assume that injected electrons has a Larmor radius, so momentum close to the momentum of injected ions, with this coefficient is about 2 or 3. And what we also need to know is the temperature of the bulk, of the downstream bulk. So here, the first guess is, of course, you go with electron ion energy equipartition and Ranke-Hugoinit conditions. But here we have this coefficient alpha, which is based on our simulation. So what exactly we see in our simulation? And this coefficient depends actually of the use shock velocity. It depends on the dimensionality of the simulation. So it also depends on the number of parameters. And if we divide these two values, just to estimate what's the difference between these two limits, we see that it's proportional to the one divided by V shock. So it means that it's this problem even harder for the shock, for the slow shocks. So it's in principle ratio in principle invalidates kind of all results when you use like high enough or shock velocity which is like 10 times larger or something like that. So we always need to be careful about that. And finally, as I mentioned, that like the most precise thing in this plot is the temperature of the downstream, because it's based on like number of simulations, like 2D simulations with different mass ratio, different shock velocities, and also I made a comparison between like 2D and 3D for the same parameter. So, and later, if you continue this line, assuming that okay, we probably can have some mechanism not only here like stochastic shock drift acceleration, but probably something else. Here we end up with the injection efficiency 10 to the minus 9, which is in average like order of magnitude lower than what we have from the simulations. But in my opinion, it's for such a simple estimation, it's pretty good, let's say. So, and yeah, so just go to the conclusions that in principle, quasi-perpendicular shocks are capable to produce turbulence around the shock transition, but more simulations are needed because we need to understand how exactly it works and at what conditions and so on. Electrons potentially can be accelerated up to injection energy, but longer simulations are needed, and in principle, more simulation, as always, more simulations are needed to understand real microphysics. And as for me, like the observational data can be explained by simulation results, but of course we need to wait a little bit longer to have better simulation results. Yeah, thank you.
Can you give us a little little more information about this outermost part of the upstream medium where Bunneman prevails. What is the ratio of the counter-streaming electron population?
You mean
it's supposed to be reflected electrons that drive the Bunneman, right? In the food.
Boom, boom. Ah, okay. It's you mean this
before the Weibull takes over, you have Bunneman.
Yes, you have this Bunneman waste.
Yes, and what is the ratio of counter-streaming populations of electrons? Otherwise, you wouldn't get.
You have like 20% of shock-reflected ions here.
Oh, ions.
Yes, and these ions interact with upcoming electrons.
It's not electrons, so you don't have counter-streaming electrons.
You have counter-streaming ions and upstream electrons.
Probably not technically quite Bunneman. Okay. But anyway, okay. 20%.
Okay. You want to ask this? I was someone.
I also,
Okay. Thanks. I just have a quick comment about your statement about the shock velocity. I agree that using too large of shock velocity, we should be careful when extrapolating our results to supernovae, but I strongly disagree that it invalidates the results because the universe is a big place and the shocks
sure.
that do move those speeds.
Okay, it's not invalidates results, but you need to remember about this ratio. This
your point is well taken.
Yeah, that's.
I have a question. So the simulation you just showed, the field was in plane or out of plane?
I mean, this one is in plane, yes.
In plane, right. So, as I mentioned, in our experience, 2D simulations with out of plane magnetic field produce more reflection of electrons.
So we need to check. Because
so your statement of more simulations needed is very true. we're now redoing all of our simulations with out of plane field.
I mean, this particular simulation was done by one of the students
sure.
like a year and a half ago, but then he failed with all the studies, and I just have this result.
Sure, I understand.
For his
yeah.
one picture. Okay.
Yeah, it is, but it was a little scary that out of plane and in plane field produces different reflection, and so actually more 3D simulations are needed to figure this out.
And we have this 3D simulation by Matsumoto, and I will meet him like in 2 weeks, and we will discuss this problem because he has these 3D simulations with pretty high obliquity. We can look at this fraction, and yeah, that's interesting, of course.
Damiana. So I didn't quite follow the point that you made on Tycho. You measured the fraction. You estimated the amount of accelerated electrons by looking at the X-ray emission at 2 kV.
Yeah.
But that emission is thermal. That tells you something about the thermal, the temperature of the electrons, which is what you are inferring, taking from simulations. It seems quite.
I mean, probably I did something wrong, okay, but as I remember, it consists of some, like this emission consists of some X-ray lines, yes, and you have like non-thermal synchrotron emission from electrons in this region. Or.
Right, but what is the takeaway message from this? So.
I mean, it's at least it's roughly corresponds. So the idea behind these calculations was like, okay, we have a bunch of simulations, and let's do some approximation. So what we can get right now from our simulations and compare with observations, like using some simple math. So what I see is okay. It's order of magnitude different, but it's not five orders of magnitude different at least. Yeah,
it seems weird that you are using the thermal emission to constrain the number of non-thermal electrons, and then using the simulation to understand what the temperature of the electrons is.
Okay, we can discuss it later. Probably there's some misunderstanding.
Fine.
Hi, thanks. Nice talk. So this question about in-plane and out-of-plane magnetic field for the simulations in two dimensions. If you take the field out of the plane, then you're suppressing the alpha anion cyclotron instabilities, which give you the ion scale ripples. So, you know, you're changing the downstream ion heating, and so you're changing, you know, so much of the structure. So really, putting the plane, the magnetic field in the plane, is the most realistic thing to do.
I was with you for a very long time, and then I converted.
So we can discuss that. You can find oscillations of the structure with the magnetic field out of the plane, but that's a completely different mechanism compared to alpha anion cyclotron.
Okay, thanks.
Okay, thank you again.